Welcome to Today's Homeowner with Danny Lipford, your partner in home improvement. Everyone has questions about their home. We've got the answers, and we have a few laughs along the way. Informative, entertaining, and sometimes off the wall. Home improvement has never been this much fun.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to this hour of Today's Homeowner Radio. And what a great hour it's going to be. We have so much information lined up for you, a lot of emails. We got a great simple solution coming up and a lot of other subjects of little areas around the home that I'll bet that you can really utilize around your home, because that's the one thing we want to do. We want to, you know, empower you with a little bit of information that can help you tackle a project on your own, or if you just want to write a check for it for someone else to do it, you'll be a lot more knowledgeable about what needs to be done in that particular case. I'm Danny Lipford, along with my buddy Joe Truini.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the show. Here we are, Danny, kicking off the month of August. The summer has been flying by.
Sure has.
As everybody's rushing to get projects done. So if you have a home improvement question, whether it's inside or outside, get in touch with us. We'll see if we can help you out today.
And one way you can do that is to send us an email by going to todayshomeowner.com/ask, or you can pick up the phone and call us 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, toll free 800-946-4420. We got a lot of great calls we do every single week, so we're going to go ahead and tackle a few of those right now.
Hey, Danny, this is Mark in Iowa, and I'm pouring a new approach pad concrete in front of my garage. And invariably they move. I was wondering what's wrong with pinning that to the garage foundation. Give me the pluses and minuses of trying to do that. Thanks.
Okay. What Mark's talking about, I believe, is where you have your garage, your concrete slab of your garage, and then your driveway going up to it. And so often what happens is what we call a cold joint there is poured at two different times. So you have a crack there. That's not the problem. The problem is over the years, water will get down in that crack between the driveway and your garage slab, and it starts undermining the integrity of the soil underneath that. Now, usually on a garage like that, you should have a pretty substantial footing, so rarely does it affect that, but you may have a 3 to 4 inch slab coming up to it for your approach or your apron, and then that water gets under there and you're going to start having some settling. I've seen things like that settle as much as 2 inches, so a great maintenance thing is to make sure you keep that filled with a concrete repair caulk or a flexible type caulk that'll allow the water to drain away from there and not get under the slab. That's the way to do that. But on his question here, Joe, I think it's probably strongly recommended that you dig back, drill into the garage slab or footings just right in that area,
right.
Epoxy some rebar into those holes and bring it out to pin it or tie it to that existing slab. All that's going to do is help stabilize it, make it stronger, and help prevent any of that settling down the road.
Yeah, I'm just not sure if you can pin successfully into a slab that's only 4 inches thick. So even if you go in the middle, you only have 2 inches of concrete above and below that. I think if I was to do this, I might just put in an expansion joint between the garage floor and this new pour of the sort of apron, the approach in front, using, you know, I think it's about almost a half inch thick asphalt saturated fiber control joint is what it's called. Mm-hmm. And you separate that. So you're basically, this little pad you're pouring is separate entirely. So if anything's going to move, you know, it'll move separately from that, because I don't think you're going to pin it in there without causing all kinds of cracks and damage to this approach you're pouring. But the key is compaction. You have to compact that soil and the gravel and everything under before pouring this, because it's going to be relatively short and relatively thin, 4 inches maybe, to try to prevent that settling. And then if something happens in the past where you have to replace it, you're only replacing that one little pad. It would be easy to do if it's not pinned to the foundation. I'm not sure. The only time I pin like a wall to a wall, you know, where you have a vertical joint. You mm-hmm. know, if you're pouring a wall up against a foundation wall, that you might pin. But I'm not sure I'd pin this one. I think I'd go with the expansion joint.
Well, you can always, too, do a little turndown footing on the actual slab. Instead of it being 4 inches,
right,
let it go from 4 inches down to 8 or 12, just to give a little more thickness right there along there to allow that. But either way, you're exactly right on the compaction. I remember years ago walking up to a job, and there was a fair amount of soil being put in a particular foundation. And I'm looking around, you know, for the plate compactor, because you're going to use a plate compactor. I said, hey, where's your compactor to compact? Oh, no, we're not. We're going to walk it down.
So, are these guys?
He said, by the time that we rake it and we all walk over it and everything, it's compacted just fine. Oh, really? Well, I guess you might as well just get in your truck and leave, because I'm not working with you anymore. Will you walk it down? No. Hey, let's go to another call from the Today's Homeowner Hotline.
Yeah, my question is, how do you get lime off of a brickwork? We have brick pillars surrounding our outer deck, and we got leaking lime, apparently. What's a good solution for that?
Well, probably may not be lime, but I think we've got something that happens a lot when moisture is introduced into any kind of masonry structure is efflorescence. And I believe that's probably because it would give the appearance of lime with that kind of salty type of look to it.
Yeah, I think I'm assuming this is efflorescence, which is just natural salts and minerals that leach out of masonry products, including mortar and brick. So you can just clean it off with warm, soapy water or in a stiff bristled brush or a 50-50 solution of water and white vinegar. And then if that doesn't work and it really is lime, then I would recommend the product CLR, which stands for Calcium Lime Rust Remover. So I think one of those two techniques would certainly work.
All right, let's grab another call from the Today's Homeowner Hotline.
Hi, this is Dave. I have a window in a shower, and I'm needing to tile around it, but the wood in that window frame sticks out a little bit. There's no way other than taking the everything out to get rid of that. So what do you do to treat that and to make it so that the water is not damaging that wood and causing wood rot and more importantly, getting through the cracks and into the wall behind the shower?
Well, I tell you, I've certainly had a lot of experience at this, older houses that have the window there. And what the evolution of this usually is, Joe, is that, you know, you have no shower. You know, you have an older house.
Right, it was just a tub at one
point. You have the tub, you have a window up above it, and then later they convert that to a shower and, you know, different ways of doing that. And then the window's still there. And I've seen many people just put an actual shower curtain up over the existing window. Rarely does that last very long.
Right.
And actually, in my new house, I put a window in my master shower, but it's almost impossible for water to hit it. It's high enough that I get plenty of natural light. But I also have tile around it, and it is also a wood window. So what we did there, now this particular window he's talking about, the framing sticking out just a tad, a lot of times you can bring your tile right up to that wood and then put an extra piece of tile encapsulating the edge of that window frame and overlapping back over your wall tile. Actually has kind of a nice pronounced framed look around the actual window.
Right.
And then you basically are just trimming that around. Certainly you would want to make sure everything's caulked and painted extremely well in there. And if water still can hit it directly, I would suggest still going with some type of waterproof curtain.
Yeah, I often, when I get questions like this, I wonder, what would I do if this was my house? And I think what I might do at this point, rather than even dealing with the wood window, I would just replace it. I would just, you're at the opportunity. I'm sure it's a relatively small window. Get an all vinyl window.
Yeah.
You know, pop out the wood window. People say, well, why can't I just take it out and just put up siding and just take out the window altogether? Well, if it's in the back of the house or the side of the house, maybe, but if it's in the front of your house, you can't do that. You just have a blank space where there used to be a window. It'd be pretty obvious. So I think I would replace it. Take the time and spend a little bit of money. It probably would only cost a couple $100 to get the window and just replace it. And this way you can tile around it. If water gets on the vinyl window, it's not an issue at all, rather than dealing with wood rot at some point.
Well, I tell you, I have removed a lot of these kind of windows and actually filled in the inside and where you never knew a window was there and put the tile up or a cultured marble or whatever.
Right.
Then on the outside, we would actually put insulation, seal it up with plywood and make sure that it's all waterproof very, very well. And then we inserted two wood shutters in there, painted them all sides so that it just looks like a window with shutters where it used to be instead of all of that. So a lot of different ways to do things, and we've got a lot of things that we're going to share with you. Talk about walk-in showers and talk about showers in different ways. We have a homeowner that's about to tackle what a lot of people want to do, removing a tub and making it a walk-in shower. We'll share those with you when we come back right here on today's Homeowner Radio.
Today's Homeowner is brought to you by Quikrete Cement and Concrete Products. It's what America's made of. And by FluidMaster. Find out more at shop.fluidmaster.com.
The Today's Homeowner Radio Show is heard on fantastic stations all over the country. We get a lot of listeners at every station that we're on, especially this one, WPTF AM 680 in Raleigh, North Carolina. Hello, everybody there in and around Raleigh. We appreciate all the great calls and emails that we get from you, and we want to encourage everybody that's listening to reach out to us and let us help you with whatever challenge you're facing in and around your home. You can reach out to us by phone, 800-946-4420, or send us an email anytime you wish at todayshomeowner.com/ask. We have a lot of emails we're going to try to get to, including this one from Danny in Kenosha, Wisconsin. I love all of those towns all over Wisconsin. I can't pronounce many of them, but that's one I can. Kenosha.
There you go. Yeah.
I have been there many times of driving through there. But Danny says, I would like to replace my tub with a walk-in shower instead of ripping out all of the tile and all of the cement under it. Can I remove just the tub and place a shower surround on the tiles using adhesive and screws? And can I just sand the tiles to rough it up so that the adhesive will stick? You know, I've never done that, but you know, if you think about it, Joe, you've got quite a bit of demolition and removal of tile in order to get that tub out. Those tubs are never easy to get out because you put the tub in and you build around it. And more often than not, especially with a cast iron tub, which Danny did send some pictures with his email, you know, normally you end up pretty barbarically beating that thing out of there with a sledgehammer and hauling it out in 5-gallon buckets or wheelbarrow or whatever you have to get it out of there. Now, if you did that, what would you have left? You would have, let's do some more demolition here, because you have to go ahead and demolish the side where you have your valve and your shower head, because, you know, if you're doing this much work, you're going to need to change that up. And then, of course, you have the tub out, so you have access to your drain to move that over. At that point, yes, you've saved a little bit of time. But now you have the time, you're going to have to go back and you're going to have to fur out those walls to make it flush with the surface of the tile. Then you've got to put your tile on top of that. And yes, you can put tile on top of that, but now you're putting tile on this material that you, the cement backer board that you have, that you furred out, built out, and that could take hours to get that out nice and flush, and then you put your tile, then all of a sudden you have two, you know, dissimilar surfaces there. You have your backer board on the lower side where the tub used to be, and then you're going up there. Then you get up there, and you have to do something to return that tile back to the wall to make sure any water doesn't get behind it. You see what I'm talking about? By the time you do all of that, come on, Danny, let's go ahead and tear out that tile and get it back down to the studs. I'm sure you agree with me on this particular matter, Joe.
Well, then I have nothing to say. Well, yeah, if you're tiling over the tile, I mean, it's going to be a lot of work. He mentioned possibly using a shower surround, which would be vinyl or solid surfacing material, and that would be easier to go right over. But there is a certain amount, like you said, he's putting in a shower, so you're going to have to open up, get rid of the old tub valve, of course.
That's right.
Raise it up, get rid of the tub spout, raise it up. In the end, how much tile are you really removing? So I would, and it's probably most showers, the tile doesn't go all the way to the ceiling anyway, so it's probably very little he'd really have to remove. And the nice thing is once you remove it all, you have exposed studs, insulation you can see, which you might need to add or replace, and then you have a nice clean surface to start with. It's not that much more work. Danny made it sound like a 3-year project, but it will go a little quicker than that. You know, if the surface is perfectly flat, can you just stick a surround to it, yeah, you'd have to clean it, sand it, clean it, and stick it on there. You can't screw it to it, but you can stick it on there. But I think I would remove the tile and start from scratch.
But still, I'd be concerned with that return on it right at the very top, because that tile's sticking out 3/4 of an inch or so, and you put your surround there, even if it's a type that's made for attaching it like that, you still got a void there that water can get down. So a bit of a challenge there. I think I would go, and we don't always say that. We don't always say absolutely tear it out, especially when you're talking about tile over tile. This is one I think we would. Joe, here's somebody that took our advice. I'd love to share this email. Christine from Washington, Michigan said, I wanted to thank Danny and Joe for their tips on the project of repurposing my old patio stones. I was featured on your radio podcast and finally got to complete the project this summer. I just wanted to share my before and after pictures of the small patio. What Danny and Joe suggested worked out perfectly. I'm very happy with the results. Thanks again for your great tips. However, I did have one tile that unfortunately did crack in the process, but your recent item on using Quikrete concrete crack repair filler did the trick. Everything's good. I'm ready for a summer of fun on the patio. Well, good, Christine.
Well, there you go.
And the pictures are great. And Corey, our engineer, will post these on the website on todayshomeowner.com so that you'll be able to see it. But a great looking patio, and it does work. And I mean, the things that we share with you are things that have always worked well for us. So, Christine, thank you so much for taking the time to write us and share those pictures with us.
Yeah, I was going to say, and that's we often say if you get some advice from us and it works, or even if it doesn't work, get in touch with us. Let us know, because we can share it with our audience. And sometimes someone might not have been listening on that particular day and listening today, so we can share those tips with them as well. So, yeah, we love hearing from you. Anyway, regardless whether you like the advice or not.
That's right. We certainly love the feedback there. Hey, we also like to try to help you save a little money, because if you recall, over the last couple of weeks, we've had a number of calls and inquiries about the concrete stenciling we recently did on a couple of the Today's Homeowner television shows. It really is an amazing way to convert this to something Chelsea came up with and found a great company called Cutting Edge Stencils. And Chelsea went right back to him and said, hey, we got to help our listeners and our viewers out here a little bit. We need a discount. Well, she's a good bargainer, because we've got you a 20% discount right now off of the stencils if you use this code CES. That would be Cutting Edge Stencil, CES Homeowner 20. CES Homeowner 20. Enter that into the website there at cuttingedgestencils.com. You get 20% off between now and October 1st. And also go to todayshomeowner.com and put in stenciling patios, and you'll see just how easy it actually is. Let's go right back to our emails here. Let's see. Margie in Wisconsin said, hi, Danny. I know that touchless kitchen sink faucets have been around for a long time, but on a recent episode of your television show, I saw a new touchless faucet for the bath sink. What a great idea. I'd love to add one of these sinks to our master bath vanity, but don't know if those faucets need to be plugged in or not, because there's no outlet inside our vanity cabinet. Also, we just discovered your radio show and love listening to you here in Wisconsin each Sunday on WHBY AM 1150. We appreciate that, Margie. Well, the answer is no problem. You really do not need any electrical outlet, because those touchless faucets like that run on a little battery pack that you have underneath. Now, I have one of the kitchen faucets that's touchless and pretty amazing. I've been in my house 2.5 years, and I think we just changed the batteries for the second time. So I would say a year is pretty close in being able to do that. It's very, very simple. It's just a little small, usually 4 batteries that connect in this little pack, and you just move it to the back of your vanity is all that's necessary. But Joe, I've told you before, when you get one of those touchless faucets, you feel like every faucet is touchless. And so I'm sitting there and I'll go to a friend's house and I'm banging it. Why are you hitting my faucet? Oh, it's one of those old fashioned kind. I have to use the actual handle.
Actually turn on the water. Well, you're making it sound like you've got to pump it out of the ground or something. It's just a matter of twisting on the... Danny's got a rough life, man.
But if your hands are dirty or something like that, or you got, cooking stuff on them, and you just reach out there with your forearm and turn it on, that's kind of cool. Nice to have.
Well, it just shows how quickly our brains get trained. Like we mentioned how when you rent a car and you drive a rental car for 2 or 3 days and you go home, and you get in your car and you're reaching for the wrong knob or lever.
I know it.
You get trained pretty quickly.
Yeah, I think it's called spoiled, exactly. Maybe. Hey, coming up here on today's Homeowner Radio, we're going to be talking to a homeowner up in Tennessee that's really tired of how their laminate countertops look. Hey, we've got some great suggestions on that and a whole lot more right here on today's Homeowner Radio. We'll be right back.
Today's homeowner is brought to you by Pavestone, creating beautiful landscapes.
And welcome back to the Today's Homeowner Radio Show. Danny Lipford here, along with my buddy Joe Truini, and we're helping as many homeowners as we can. Right now, we're going to Knoxville, Tennessee. Liz is on the line. Liz, welcome to the show, and tell us what's happening at your house there.
I have 30-year-old countertops, and I like the color, but they need to be resurfaced. I noticed all of the kits or to change the color or texture or whatever. And I like my countertops, but they're just really getting old.
Yeah. Okay. Well, so you're just looking to kind of lock in the color, kind of put a clear sealer over it.
Right.
Huh. Interesting. Joe, what do you think on that? Because you would, you get into that food safe scenario,
right, yeah.
You know, and making sure that, you know, anything that you put on there. What would you recommend to Liz? Because that's most of the time people end up hating their countertops and want to change
right,
the color.
Yeah.
But to lock in that color, what would you recommend?
Liz, are these plastic laminate countertops?
Right.
They are. Okay. Yeah. Well, you could put, if you want to keep a clear sealer, a clear coat on it, Minwax makes a water-based polyurethane varnish. I think it's called polycrylic, because it's acrylic polyurethane. Most polyurethane, true polyurethane, are oil-based. But what you want is water-based. Anytime you want a clear finish on a surface that you don't want a yellow, you don't want it to eventually turn yellow over time, you want water-based, not oil-based, because oil-based almost always eventually yellows. But in any case, so you could try that now. When that dries and it's water-based, it should be, I mean, you have to contact Minwax, but I'd be really surprised if they said it wasn't suitable for use around food, because it is water-based. And that would be really easy to apply. It's really affordable. When you go to buy it, just be aware that it comes in three different sheens, meaning like the glossiness to it. It comes in matte, satin, and gloss, matte being the least glossy. So you certainly don't want gloss. I think I'd probably go with matte or satin finish. And you just apply it as if it were like paint almost, brush it on, nice thin layer. You could let it dry, sand it lightly, put on a second layer. But that'd be the only thing I know that's clear that you could use. Now, Danny, we've talked to Deitch Products, to Peter Deitch about his products. I don't know if he has a clear sealer, but they
don't
make
know
sealers
either, yeah.
You can go over.
Yeah, because in a lot of those kits that you were talking about, Liz, you know, the finishing process is to apply one or two coats of their clear material just to go over the stone and so forth. So you might just drop by DeitchCoatings.com, D-A-I-C-H Coatings.com, and see if he does have a clear sealer, because that would also be another alternative for you.
Right. Yeah, I had wondered about buying one of those kits and just not using their color, you know, see if that would work.
Yeah. Well, you could do that. It probably would be a little expensive for you to buy the whole kit, you know, just for that. But I'm sure that's a product's available separately, though, and that'd be a good place to start.
Okay.
Well, thank you so much for being with us. Best of luck on that. And we also hope you have a great weekend.
Okay. Thank you. And you too.
All right. Thank you. Thank you.
It's amazing. She has 30-year-old laminate that's in really good shape, so she must be really careful, because most people slide stuff on and off of cabinets, and you know, it wears right through that color on the very top surface. If you ever go to a convenience store or a bank or someplace where they have plastic laminate counters, you can see where it's just worn right off.
Oh, yeah.
Right down to, and you'll see a brown surface. That brown surface is actually craft paper.
That
is literally brown craft paper. That's the core of plastic laminate.
Yeah, exactly. And another email here from Pablo in California. Our home draws water from a deep well, and all wastewater flows into a septic tank. For most of the year, the water supply is really good, but every summer we have a little problem with sediment that clogs the aerators at our sinks and our shower heads. Plus, the washing machine takes forever to fill with water. What can we do to eliminate these issues? So, seems strange there. I guess maybe the water level gets a little lower or something there, but sediment coming into the house is never a good idea. What about some of the filtration systems that that you've done some stories on in the past, Joe? Is that possibly a way to do it, or are you just asking for trouble with getting moving that sediment in there? I almost wonder if it's time to talk to the well man about a new screening on the bottom of that well.
Right, and that's exactly right, Dan. That's the reason you get more sediment in summer, because the water levels are usually lower, so there's less water, but just as much sediment, so it finds its way through the pump and into your house. I had this issue. We had it year-round, but we had this issue, and I solved it with two different ways. One was with a sand separator, which you'd have to call the well guy. He'd pull your pump and he'd put a sand separator on it, which is essentially just a PVC pipe sleeve that goes over it, and it has some holes drilled in it at an angle. And so when it sucks the water, it creates this vortex that suspends the sand in the water for a few seconds until it falls away and you're getting mostly water. So that's the first stage. And then the second thing is to put in a sediment filter in your house. And there's several different kinds. And the one that I've installed twice now is a Honeywell Brockman. And I can't think of the number. I think it's like F75 or something like that. But what I love about it, you don't have to change the filters. You just back flush it. You stick a hose out window, or I put it into a bucket. You just back flush it. Because if you buy the type with a filter, the filters are $10 or $12 or $20 a piece. You want to be tied to that for the rest of your life? No, thanks. So try this Honeywell Brockman. It's got a stainless steel. It has like three or four stainless steel screens of various sizes. And that will take out pretty much everything. But you do have to back flush it every now and then just to, keep it clean.
Well, you writers, you come up with all kinds of words and put them together there.
Like what?
A suspended vortex. Yeah, I use that all the time.
You told your chiropractor you had.
I have a suspended vortex in my water softener, but that's what you want. I mean, that's not bad. That's a good thing. So
yeah, the great thing about that sand separator is there's no moving parts. It's literally a plastic sleeve with some holes drilled in it. So it's pretty affordable. It's the cost of pulling the pump and putting it back in. But yeah, that's what I'd recommend.
There you go. A lot of different ways that you can get the answers to any of your questions. Again, we want to encourage you to give us a call, 800-946-4420. And you can send us an email, todayshomeowner.com/ask. And don't forget about all the great social media that we have out there on Facebook, Pinterest, Instagram. And you can certainly message me through Twitter at Danny Lipford. And, Facebook's also a great way to send us messages or post any questions that you have. We monitor that constantly, and we'll be glad to answer any questions that we get through the Today's Homeowner Facebook page. A lot of things happening there, a lot of ways that we can help you. Hey, if you're tired of mowing grass right now, I mean, during this time of the year, a lot of times you just get tired of getting out there and mowing. Well, we can change that whole experience with some information we're going to share with you when we come back here on Today's Homeowner Radio. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Today's Homeowner with Danny Lipford, brought to you by Quikrete Cement and Concrete Products. It's what America's made of.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Today's Homeowner Radio Show. Danny Lipford here, and by now you probably have been mowing a lot of grass around your house, and so many people are starting to really embrace using the kind of equipment that the pros use. Hey, right now I've got a really cool product to talk to you about, and with me is Mike Mayfield, who's a product marketing manager for our friends at Exmark. Mike, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Hey, I'll tell you what, I know that you guys have been getting some incredible reviews on the new relaunch of the Radius X series. And, of course, everybody seems to be finding out more and more about the zero-turn Radius mowers. It's just incredible. Tell us a little bit about a few of the features of this particular mower.
Yeah, so we've got the Radius, which has been around for several years. It's been one of our better products. really strong, accepted really well. Homeowners have purchased this machine, been very happy with it. And what we've got now is the same machine. We just have a few heavier duty options on this. We've got some heavy horsepower on this. It's about 31 horsepower.
Oh, wow.
And then we've gone to a really aggressive tread on the back that just gives the machine a really good look.
I know I've used this one before, had an opportunity to. Kind of surprising how comfortable it is, you know, and then with the adjustments that you have on the seat and that kind of thing, not
yeah.
bad. It doesn't feel like work when you're out there mowing all the grass.
Absolutely. It is an X-Series machine, so it has a full suspension seat. Like you said, there's plenty of space for the operator. It's got that nice cushion in the seat. Bolstered seat and armrest, so very comfortable machine to operate.
Yeah, because sometimes if you've got one that just really vibrates a lot or kind of beats you up a little bit, and it really, you know, and all of us hope that we have a nice smooth line, but you're bound to have a bump here and there, but being able to isolate that vibration and so forth, not only does it make it quieter, it makes it a lot more pleasant to use.
Absolutely. I mean, you're dealing with enough out there. You've got heat and all those kind of things. So we want to do everything we can with this machine to increase the comfort.
Also, with a 60-inch mower deck, man, you can, you know, we've dealt with a lot of homeowners that, you know, moving. Of course, a lot of people were driven out of a lot of the cities and maybe have a larger lawn than they used to have. And when you got a 60-inch mowing deck, man, you can get it done quick.
Yeah, it's great. I mean, the productivity is unbelievable, certainly for somebody that has not operated a zero-turn machine in the past. It's crazy how fast you can get out and get the job done.
Yeah, you know, when you get in a good groove on that, and of course, when you see the pros out there on their X-Mark mowers, and you see them all over the place, golf courses, everybody's using them, and man, they can go so fast and whoop, turn around, back and forth, because, you know, if you're trying to make a living at it, you know, time is certainly money in a situation like that, and some of the early generation zero-turn mowers from other companies just didn't live up to the billing very well. But you guys, when you hit the market with the zero-turn, really did work well, and it seems like it's improving every day. So the pros can make more money at it, and homeowners can you know, save a little time for things like fishing and hunting and other things, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we take what we've developed in commercial mowers. We're bringing them down to this machine. Which actually there's a customers, we have commercial customers running this machine. So it's not the absolute top end price wise, but it's got all the productivity and comfort that those pros are running on those top end machines.
Yeah, I tell you, very dependable with the Kawasaki engine and everything, all the other elements you got. And you just have to get out to an X-Mark dealer and really check these out and to find out where one is in your neck of the woods. You can go to xmark.com, and that's xmark.com. Mike Mayfield, certainly appreciate you being with us, and I look forward to talking to you again soon.
Absolutely. Sounds great. Thank you.
Yeah, those zero-turn mowers started off as only professional machines, and now you see them, you know, most manufacturers are making for homeowners. And if you're not sure exactly what that is, you've probably seen them. Instead of a steering wheel, they have two handles.
Uh-huh.
It's kind of like
mm-hmm.
kind of like a tank. Have you ever been inside a tank? The tank's actually, that was Danny's first car, I think, was a tank. And you have the two handles, and it allows you to literally turn on a dime, as they say.
You know, it seemed like there's always a controversy, and you get a lot of different opinions from people about whether you should gather all of the clippings, you know,
right.
put them in your mulch pile or whatever, or retain it. You know, it's kind of seemed like it split 50-50 on those that say, you know, use a mulching blade and leave it for the nutrients on your yard. But then, you know, when you mow and you have that accumulation of clippings here and there all over the thing, you
right.
know, then you want them off of there. So I really don't know what's the real truth on that particular subject.
Right. And plus, I see people around here, you know, they hire people to mow their lawn. They come first thing in the morning, the grass is wet.
I know it.
And
yeah.
they're not collecting the clippings. So they must have an amazing mulching system on this that is just grinding them up and blowing them down through the grass into the soil level where it's not clumping.
Uh-huh.
And you don't have to rake them up or anything.
Hey, Joe, we got the simple solution coming up. Give us a little tease on that.
It's how to drill a hole in vinyl siding without wrecking the siding and leaving a big jagged hole.
Now, there's a lot of vinyl siding houses out there, so that'll be
sure
a
are.
Great tip to share. Simple Solutions, always fun to share with you, and that'll happen when we come back here on today's Homeowner Radio.
Welcome back to Today's Homeowner Radio. Here are Danny and Joe.
And I'll certainly welcome you back as well, because this is one of the times that people love to listen to Today's Homeowner Radio, when my buddy Joe shares with us another simple solution.
All right, Danny, you just mentioned a lot of homes in the U.S. with vinyl siding, and I think the last statistic I saw was over a third of the homes have vinyl siding. And if you have vinyl siding in your house, every now and then you might need to have drill a hole through it, right, to run a new line for electrical cable or air conditioning, refrigerant lines or something like that. And the best way to drill, this is what the pros use. They use a hole saw, right, to drill these large diameter holes. But what you want to do is run the drill in reverse. Now, you might wonder, well, how's it going to cut a hole if I'm running it in reverse? Well, it will. And what it does, it leaves a nice, clean hole. If you run it forward, there's too great a chance that those teeth are going to dig into that siding and crack it, especially if it's cold. But regardless, so what you do is you run it, drill in reverse, just to get through the vinyl, and then you remove that plug of vinyl from this hole saw, and then you switch to the forward speed to bore through the sheathing and whatever else you have to drill through. So that's how to drill a nice clean hole in vinyl siding with a hole saw running in reverse.
Oh, another great simple solution, and something that a lot of people are having to deal with, because, you know, sure, you think of we get so many questions about how can I hang this heavy yard art, or how can I hang this mirror, or how can I hang these different things. We actually have a number of articles on todayshomeowner.com. I think one of the articles has been very popular, is how to hang anything from anything. So, you know, it gives you, you know, a kind of a guideline and things that you know, the proper things to use when you're hanging things, whether it's on masonry or whatever. So all of that's waiting on you at todayshomeowner.com. And also, if you want to just kind of hang out and watch maybe over 500 simple solutions, you can also go to todayshomeowner.com/simple solutions to do that very thing. Hey, Joe, I wanted to remind everybody one more time about the opportunity to save 20% off of the stencils that we have been showing on the television show, where you're able to use a stencil to completely transform your concrete garage or your patio or breezeway or whatever. And all you have to do is go to cuttingedgestencils.com. And if you want to use the code CESHOMEOWNER20, which CES stands for Cutting Edge Stencils, of course, then you get a 20% off any stencils that you order there. And if you go to todayshomeowner.com and put in on the search engine there, stenciling concrete, you'll see the step-by-step videos and articles on telling you exactly what to do. Also, while you're there at todayshomeowner.com, find out where you can see the Today's Homeowner television show in your area. And this week's episode is all about garage organization. We could all use a few tips on how to regain the use of your garage, and who knows, actually even maybe park a car in there with all the stuff that we have.
That's right.
But we built this really cool workbench, but under the workbench has an area for 6 different totes or container storage bins that you're able to pull out, and it gives you an opportunity. Of course, they're clear. We have labels on them, and man, you wouldn't believe all of the things that you can get in those tubs and organize them. And of course, the well-known way of getting more use out of your garage is to get everything you can off the floor and on the walls, and we give some great ways, real easy do-it-yourselfer ways of handling that very thing. It's always a great before and after picture, Joe, when you get into a garage, and you kind of encourage people to purge a little bit here and there, maybe make some donations, and then take what's left and really get it organized. It's always a gratifying kind of project.
Yeah, and you'd be surprised. The first step is to clear out the garage and then to reorganize what you're putting back. And you'll find a lot of that stuff you don't have to put back. You know, you'll just realize, first, you won't even remember that you had
it. That's right.
And if you haven't used it in a year or so, like, don't bother putting it back in the garage. Ordinarily, you gain at least 25 to 30% of space.
That's exactly right. Hey, that pretty much is going to wrap up the Today's Homeowner Radio show for this week. We certainly appreciate you spending some of your busy weekend with us here, and we certainly hope we've been able to provide some information that you can use at your house right now. I'm Danny Lipford, along with my co-host Joe Truini, also our engineer producer Corey Wilson, and the whole Today's Homeowner family, saying we hope you have a great weekend. We'll see you next week.